Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Our episodes deal with serious and often distressing incidents. Listener discretion is advised.
Tens of thousands of young students travel to Scotland every year to enrol at some of the country's best universities. Scotland's universities offer some of the best setups and support for international students in the world. It is the reason that so many make their way to the large cities of Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Aberdeen to attain their degrees. Alongside the education, international students also get the chance to experience culture and life in Scottish cities, none more so in Glasgow. A particular hotspot for students in Glasgow is the trendy West End, where cafes and restaurants offer outdoor seating and relaxed vibes, giving a European feel to the area. Later in the day, bars are filled inside and outside before customers make their next move around closing time to a nightclub. The Sanctuary nightclub, just off of the popular Byers Road, offers a high-end night for its customers. On the night of April 11, 2015, an international student from Cork, Ireland, Karen Buckley, stood outside with friends as they queued for 20 minutes to get inside. Karen was studying at Glasgow Caledonian University for a master's degree in occupational therapy. Already a qualified nurse back home in Ireland, she wanted to progress her career and move to an area where she could make a difference to people's day-to-day lives. After moving to Glasgow just a few months earlier, she had managed to find a room in a Glasgow flat along with three other Irish students. The four girls quickly became friends and began to explore what Glasgow's nightlife had to offer. That night at the Sanctuary, all four girls drank and partied as the club grew busier and busier. Around 1 a.m, Karen stated to one friend that she was going to the restroom, but instead headed for the exit. As the music stopped just before 2 a.m, Karen's jacket lay on the seat where she had left it when they arrived. Her friends tried to call her, but there was no answer. When Karen hadn't returned to the flat by the following morning, her friends knew something was wrong, and a call was finally placed to Police Scotland to report her missing.
I'm GS, and this is Skinwalker.
The youngest of four children, Karen was the first and only daughter for parents Marion and John Buckley. The family lived in a small farming community, Mourne Abbey, in County Cork, Ireland. All three of her brothers, Brendan, Kieran and Damien, played GAA, also known as hurling or Gaelic football. Following on from her brothers, Karen also decided to join her local club, Clyde Rovers and play on the girls' team. She attended St Mary's Secondary School in Mallow, just a short drive from her home in Moornabbey. During her time in school, Karen found it easy to make friends and was well liked by her classmates. She maintained her focus on her studies, and after completing her time at St Mary's Secondary School, she attended the University of Limerick, where she graduated with her nursing degree. After graduation, Karen took some time for herself and began travelling the world. She travelled to Thailand and South Africa before returning home to finally put her degree to use. Unlikely to get a job local to her family in Moornabbey, Karen instead travelled to the UK and landed a job at the Princess Alexandra Hospital in Harlow, Essex. After working there for several months, Karen made the decision to progress her career further by moving into occupational therapy. An occupational therapist assists people of all ages with any physical, sensory, or cognitive problems using everyday activities, exercises, and other therapies. Karen applied for a place in an occupational therapy course at Glasgow Caledonian University and quickly heard back that she had been successful. After several months living in Essex, she packed her bags and prepared for her move to Scotland. First on her list of things to do was to find a place to stay. As luck would have it, three Irish girls completing the same course had a space in their flat they were looking to fill, and Karen contacted them just on time. The flat was located in Garnet Hill, an area at the very top of Glasgow's town centre. Home to the Glasgow School of Art and Glasgow Film Theatre, the area offers easy walks into the city centre or Glasgow's West End. Since moving into the flat, Karen and the three other girls she was living with had been exploring Glasgow's nightlife, sampling a different nightclub each time they ventured out. All four of the girls were new to Glasgow, so wanted to see and experience new places each time. On Saturday, the 11th of April, the girls had gotten ready for another night out. They had decided to go to the West End and attempt to get into the Sanctuary nightclub, a popular place for footballers in Glasgow's well-to-do. The girls had made sure they were dressed for the occasion. Karen donned a black jumpsuit with red high heels. By the time they reached the Sanctuary on Dumbarton Road, around 11:25, the four girls were feeling slightly tipsy from the drinks they had before leaving their flat in Garnet Hill. After queuing for 20 minutes, they entered the nightclub and found a seat where they could place their bags. Karen placed down her jacket she had been wearing as they took to the dance floor. Just over an hour later, Karen had come back to the table where she picked up her bag and told one of her friends that she was going to nip to the toilet. Thinking nothing of it, her friends had continued to enjoy their night, only realising once the lights came back on that Karen hadn't returned from the toilet. Her jacket lay at the table with them, and after searching for her in the club, they were ushered out for closing. All three girls returned to the Garnet Hill flat, believing that perhaps Karen had already gone home. When she wasn't there, they considered the possibility that she had went home with someone from the nightclub. It would be unlike her, but they hadn't known each other for long and didn't want to overreact. The following day, having still heard nothing from Karen and with calls now going straight to voicemail, they placed a call with Police Scotland to tell them that they believed Karen was missing. The operator who took the call was hesitant to declare Karen missing due to the fact it had only been 12 hours since her friends had seen her. But nonetheless, officers were alerted to be on the lookout for the Irish student. A call was then made to Karen's parents to alert them of the situation. after hearing that she hadn't come home. Marion and John both knew something wasn't right and immediately made plans to travel to Glasgow. As part of the search, the Sanctuary nightclub was asked to hand over CCTV footage for review by police, and their interest was soon spiked. Wearing her black jumpsuit and red heels, Karen was immediately recognisable in the footage. Standing at the front door of the club, she could be seen talking to a man around 1 a.m, the same time she had told friends she was going to use the restroom. She stood there chatting briefly before leaving the nightclub and crossing the road. The same man then reappeared as she was crossing the road and once again engages her in conversation as they walk away together. Surrounding CCTV was then requested so that investigators could trace exactly where she had went once she had walked out of the CCTV footage from the nightclub. They soon found that she had went with the as-yet unidentified male to his car, which he had parked near to the sanctuary, and the pair had gotten in before driving off. On Monday, April 13, one day later, police had identified the man Karen was seen walking away with. Alexander Pactow was a 21-year-old man from Bears Den in the north of the city, one of four children to Scottish mother Noreen and French father Guillaume. He had a privileged upbringing. Guillaume ran a successful courier business which had afforded the family to send their boys to the exclusive Kelvinside Academy, where fees can run up to £12,000 per year. He had been a quiet pupil who had been socially awkward and struggled to interact with his classmates. His time at Kelvinside Academy was cut short after his father Guillaume's business began to struggle and he was quickly switched to the local state school, Bears Den Academy. Due to his previous education, his teachers there had high hopes for him to progress into university. However, Alexander left school at 17 with plans to launch his own courier business, just as his father had done. He then enrolled in a business course at Annieslan College, which was short-lived after he soon dropped out. Other than his awkwardness around girls and being known as a fantasist by those around him, Alexander Pactow had seemed like a normal youngster. What those around him didn't know was that Alexander was hiding a secret. In November 2011, he enjoyed a night out in town with friends. At just 17 years old, Alex stood at 6 foot and 4 inches and could have fooled any doorman that he was over the age of 18 to drink in pubs and clubs. Later on in the evening, Alex had left alone and began talking to a 24-year-old woman outside of a nightclub in circumstances eerily similar to those of Karen's disappearance. He offered to share a cab with the woman standing alone and began to walk with her towards a taxi rank. As they took a shortcut through one of Glasgow's many lanes cutting through busy streets, he turned on the woman, and it was alleged that he attempted to sexually assault her. As the commotion began, passers-by had noticed the pair in the lane and shouted toward them. When they realised the situation, they ran towards them, with Alexander choosing to run away and flee the scene. The case against Alexander was soon ready to proceed at court, but just weeks beforehand, Alexander was involved in a car crash that left him in an induced coma for 4 weeks, as well as a lengthy recovery from broken ribs and a broken hip. Months later, when the case did eventually go to court, the case had dragged on for so long that memories had faded, and eventually, all charges against him were dropped. In the years after this, Alexander's life went from problem to problem. In 2013, his parents divorced. Initially, Alexander went with his mother to stay in the small village of Drimmen in Stirlingshire, but less than a year later, he was moving back to Glasgow to stay with his father. Guillaume had quickly moved on from his divorce and was in a relationship with a new woman. Alexander and Guillaume's new partner didn't see eye to eye, and after heated arguments and tension in their house, Guillaume asked Alexander to find somewhere else to stay. He then placed an ad online to find somewhere to stay, but he soon heard back and found a flat in Drumchapel. He stayed in this flat with a 48-year-old local woman and a Greek couple. Kathleen Stewart said that Alexander would often swing their conversations on to talking about sex and make the whole thing awkward. The other girl in the flat stated to Kathleen that she didn't want to be left alone with him as she was uncomfortable around him. He failed to hold down a regular job throughout this time, also having short stints working in a home and garden shop, as well as a fireworks shop. Not long before April 2015, Alexander had moved from Drumchapel to a flat on Dorchester Avenue in Kelvindale in Glasgow's West End. In the years since the breakup of his parents' marriage, he had also begun to struggle with keeping his weight down. His bad luck with finding a girlfriend had led to him turning to food for comfort, and he soon found his weight had ballooned, which had made him self-conscious, according to friends. After looking into the background of the man on the CCTV footage, police were certain that they now wanted to speak with Alexander so that they could piece together exactly what had happened after Karen had left the sanctuary. They attempted to reach him around midday on Monday, April 13. However, there was no answer at his door. Two officers returned that evening around 6 p.m. and after knocking, the door quickly flew open. Alexander Pactow appeared to be ready to leave his flat and was not at all surprised to see police officers at his door. His first words to them were, "I was just coming to see you." He stated that he had seen on TV that Karen Buckley was missing and that he recognised her from the Sanctuary nightclub and that he was wanting to help. The two police officers requested if they could come in to speak with him, and Alexander stepped aside to invite them in. Immediately, they both noted that they could smell bleach, but Alexander stated that he had cleaned the flat that day to explain it away. Inside his bedroom, he had left laying out a toolbox, a roll of parcel tape and nail brushes. Strangely, they noted though, was that the mattress he had did not fit his bed frame. During their conversation, Pactow admitted that Karen had in fact came back to his flat with him, but that she had left around 4 a.m. He was then asked if he would accompany the officers to Helen Street Police Station to make an official witness statement, which he agreed to. During a search of his clothes at the police station, officers found a receipt for drain unblocker, caustic soda, and two small keys.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In the interview room, Alexander Pactow calmly recalled his version of events from the evening as he repeatedly told officers he wished to help. He stated that he and Karen had returned to his flat where they enjoyed some more drinks before they had consensual sex. While they were having sex, Karen had hit her head on the bedpost and left just after, around 4 a.m. It was only the following morning that Alexander realised she must have cut her head when he found blood on his bedsheets. After seeing the news that Karen had disappeared, he panicked, and instead of going to the police, he tried to get the blood out of his mattress with bleach and other chemicals. After this had failed, he dumped the mattress and clothes he had been wearing in woods near Drimmen before burning them. Alexander had remained calm throughout the interview and had managed to account for most of his time in the hours following her disappearance. However, as of yet, there had been no other suspects to come out of the case. At 11:55 p.m. that night, police cordoned off his flat for forensic searches while Alexander stayed at a Holiday Inn in Glasgow. Alexander wasn't the only person staying at the flat in Dorchester Avenue, however. His flatmate was interviewed by officers, but he was unable to provide any information to them about hearing anything that evening. He stated that his mother had stayed at the flat that night as they were going hill walking the following day, and both had gotten up early and headed off without noting anything strange. On Tuesday, April 14, Police Scotland scheduled a press conference alongside Karen's parents to appeal for any information that could help lead to finding Karen. Marion and John had prepared statements for what they wished to say, but everything was thrown into chaos when police received a call just 20 minutes before to alert them that someone had found Karen's handbag. The bag contained her passport and mobile phone. It had been found near a rubbish bin in Dosholm Park, less than a kilometre from Alexander's flat. The person who had discovered it had in fact found it on the Sunday morning and had planned to drop it off at a local police station, but hadn't done so yet. After seeing the appeals on news channels, she had decided to look at its contents where she discovered Karen's belongings. The 2 p.m. press conference continued, with Marion and John being updated on the discovery and the huge search that had now been mounted in the local area. Detective Superintendent Jim Kerr from the Major Investigations Team stated, "Although this is very much a missing person inquiry, we are gravely concerned for Karen's safety." He went on to say that the man seen with Karen in CCTV footage had been traced and spoken to, and confirmed that he was not a suspect. The Daily Record newspaper then ran with an interview the following day with Alexander Packthow's mother, Noreen, in which she stated her son had nothing to do with the disappearance, quoting Jim Kerr's comments at the press conference, confirming he wasn't a suspect. However, things can change fast in investigations, and around midday on Wednesday, April 15, the order was given for Alexander Packthow to be detained as a suspect once again. At 1:55 p.m, as he sat at his table in Starbucks on Nelson Mandela Place in Glasgow's city centre, two officers entered and headed straight towards him. Packthow made no comment when arrested and was taken straight to Helen Street Police Station for the second time. While searching the contents of his clothing, police found a note written on hotel-headed paper of exactly what he had said to officers in his first interview. With Alexander held in police custody, investigators had received a tip-off from an old friend of his about a storage unit he used to store fireworks in. The caller had seen the appeals on news channels and thought if Alexander was to be involved, then the storage unit would likely have been a place of interest for police. The unit was at High Craigton Farm in Mulgay, an area in between Bearsden and Drimmen, two areas where he had grown up 30 minutes after the call was made, police arrived at High Craigton Farm. It was just after 3:30 p.m. and police found an extensive area with houses and outhouses on the site used for storage. It was over 4 hours later, after searching in various other units, that finally one unit was opened and the search began to seem ominous. Inside, a single blue plastic barrel sat in the centre of the floor. Two locked padlocks were placed on the barrel's lid to prevent it from being opened. After being declared safe for examination, the barrel's lid was removed. Inside, the body of Karen Buckley sat in the fetal position, partially submerged in a watery substance. A later post-mortem examination confirmed that Karen had been the victim of an assault and had died from the blows to the head while being strangled. Her body had then been placed in the caustic soda solution after death in an attempt to dispose of her remains. Alexander Paktow had remained calm in his first police interview. He had stated repeatedly that he wanted to help and was happy to do whatever he could to assist. His story had covered his version and timeline of events, and would have been enough to satisfy his level of involvement had it not been for the investigations the officers had been completing in the background. They had spoken to those who knew him and had managed to trace back exactly where he had been that night, and they now knew that Alexander wasn't telling the whole truth. The following timeline was pieced together by investigating officers as well as the eventual testimony of Alexander Paktow. On the night of April 11, Alexander and seven of his friends had been drinking at his Dorchester Avenue flat before calling two taxis to take them to the Sanctuary nightclub around 11 p.m. When only one taxi turned up to take the group, four hopped in, leaving the other four to wait for another. Alexander changed his mind and stated to his friends that he would drive there and leave his car parked nearby overnight to collect the following day. All four drove in Alexander's silver Ford Focus and eventually parked 100 yards away on Dumbarton Road. Around 20 minutes to 12, the eight men entered the nightclub and were shown to the booth that they had pre-booked for the night. They enjoyed their night, ordering drinks to their private booth, before Alexander left the nightclub just shortly before 1 a.m. He then returned, only for a few minutes inside, before once again heading for the front door. At this time, Karen Buckley headed for the exit, and by chance, ran into Paktow. He struck up a conversation with her. What was said was unclear, however, she appeared to be comfortable talking with him. Officers made the assumption that Alexander had offered Karen a lift home, which she had accepted, and this was why she walked with him willingly to the car. After leaving Dumbarton Road, he drove to the nearby Kelvin Way, a quiet road which cuts through Kelvin Grove Park. At 1 in the morning, this road would most likely be completely empty. He parked his car there for just over 12 minutes, before he then set off once more, heading for home. Instead of taking his normal route to Kelvindale, he made one more stop inside Dosholm Park, just 5 minutes from his house. There, he parked his car for 26 minutes, in which he exited the vehicle and walked into the park before returning a short time later. He arrived home just after 2 a.m, a whole hour after leaving the nightclub and getting into his car with Karen. After the discovery of Karen's handbag inside Dosholm Park that day, police firmly believed that Alexander had attempted to dispose of the evidence or create a false story that she had walked through there herself. bank statements and phone records painted an even more incriminating picture for him in the days following. At 8 a.m. on Sunday morning, Alex used his mobile phone to research the chemical properties of sodium hydroxide, better known as caustic soda. He then travelled to hardware store B&Q to purchase 6 litres of the substance, along with a mask and gloves. This was quickly followed by another purchase, this time at a pound stretcher store, where he had been able to buy more caustic soda. Just after midday, he texted his flatmate to say that he had lost his house keys and asked him what time he would be returning from his day out with his mother. His flatmate replied that he wouldn't be home until 8 p.m. Alexander spent the rest of the day inside the flat until his flatmate eventually returned at 8:15 p.m, at which point he told him he was going to sleep. His flatmate noted that the house had been cleaned extensively by Alexander, especially the bathroom, which had a strong smell of bleach. Alexander would later confess that he had kept Karen's body inside the bath along with the caustic soda solution. The following morning, just after 4:30 a.m, he left the house and travelled to Bridge 27 of the Forth and Clyde Canal for only a few minutes before entering a Tesco superstore on Maryhill Road and asking a staff member to recommend cleaning products to remove bloodstains from a mattress. After that, he visited Tesco in Mulgay to buy white spirits and a lighter. He then drove 6 kilometres to High Craigton Farm, where he set alight Karen's clothing and some bloodstained items from his flat, including cloves and sponges. At 8:34 a.m, Alexander phoned a storage equipment supplier, Invopac, and ordered a 220-litre blue barrel, which he collected from their depot at City Park Industrial Estate in the East End, immediately. Another receipt was found, which showed on the way a further purchase of caustic soda from a pound stretcher store at 9:38 a.m. was made, before eventually returning to his flat. He then made a further 2 journeys to High Craigton Farm from there. The first journey, he took his bloodstained mattress, a suitcase on which Karen's body had rested, and other items in his car. Once at the farm, he found a quiet hidden spot in the woodland nearby and set fire to the items. Before leaving for his second journey, he placed Karen's body into the blue barrel and partially filled it with a drain unblocker and caustic soda. At 2 p.m, a neighbour seen him struggling down the stairs with the barrel, but had thought nothing of it at the time. En route, he stopped in at an Asda superstore, where he purchased 2 padlocks and more white spirit solution. Once at High Craigton Farm, he met a local farmer and inquired about renting a storage unit from him. They agreed a price of £10 for the week before Pactow returned to his car, removed the barrel and put it in one of the sheds. At 4:16 p.m, he took his car to Annieslan Car Valet Centre to get the vehicle cleaned, arriving home just before police knocked on his door at 6 p.m. Police finally arrested Pactow on Thursday, April 16, on suspicion of Karen Buckley's murder. At 4 p.m. that day, police held a short press conference at Govan Police Station, but Detective Superintendent Jim Kerr confirmed that the body found was that of Miss Buckley and that her family had been made aware of the discovery. Detective Superintendent Kerr confirmed to the public that a 21-year-old man had been arrested in connection with Miss Buckley's death and a report would be submitted to the Procurator Fiscal, and that it was anticipated that he would appear in court the next day. Jim Kerr also read a statement on behalf of Karen's family, in which her father John stated that Marion, himself and their three sons were absolutely heartbroken. The following day, Friday 17, Alexander Paktow appeared at a private sitting in Glasgow's Sheriff Court, where he was charged with the murder of Karen Buckley, along with attempting to defeat the ends of justice by providing false statements to police. Paktow made no plea. A vigil was held on the same day in George Square in the centre of Glasgow, where hundreds of mourners gathered along with Karen's family to remember her. The following week, the murder weapon was finally found by divers on Tuesday 21st of April near Bridge 27 of the Forth and Clyde Canal. A wrench which Paktow had stored in his car was what he had used to beat Karen, and this was the reason for his detour the day after her disappearance. With no possible way of denying responsibility for the crimes, Alexander Paktow pled guilty at his trial hearing on August 11. At sentencing, Judge Lady Ray stated that she found it extremely difficult to find words for what he had done to Karen. She made special mention that she found it extraordinary that the defence had argued against using Alexander's actions after the murder when taking into account his sentencing, instead stating, "I have come to the view that I cannot ignore your conduct after the killing." Judge Lady Ray sentenced Paktow to life, with a minimum of 23 years to be served before he would be eligible for parole. In 2019, Paktow was moved from HMP Kilmarnock after riots which he took part in over mail checks on prisoners' personal mail. He was then transferred to Sockton Prison and so far has remained quiet there after making a name for himself in HMP Kilmarnock. In a family statement written by Karen's father John, he stated, "We will never see Karen again in this life. Never see her smiling face, hear her laugh and hear her voice. There are no words to describe her loss. We know even though she is gone from this life, she is still very close to us. She will always be in our broken hearts wherever we go. We talk to her, pray to her, and we know that she will help us. Though Karen will never come back, we only hope someday to be with her."